Hi, this is John March, and we're here at the 2019 Rocky Mountain Arch Top Festival here in Arvada, Colorado. First of ever of its kind. We're very excited to be here. And I am here with Bob Bakert from Jazz Guitar Today, one of the founders, lead editor, principals, and all sorts of other names and accoutrements that I'm probably not catching at the moment.
Doing very well.
Thought I did that pretty well. And I'm really happy to have you here. Welcome to Arvada and welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. It's nice to be asked.
I'm glad. Can you tell me just a little bit about yourself and what you do with Jazz Guitar Today?
Well, a little bit about myself. I'll try to be fairly brief. I was in business as a manufacturer's rep for 30 years in pro audio and AV, MI, etc. I retired from that a few years back, went to jazz school, been playing guitar since I was like 9 years old. Always played, played professional for 15 years. And then I was doing some consulting work for Eastman, and I was hired by them. I stayed with them for about 2 years working, directing their guitar department, if you will, with doing all kinds of things for them. It would take too long to explain. And while I was there, I noticed that there really wasn't any place for this guitar community to gather in any kind of media.
So when you say this guitar community?
Well, the jazz guitarists specifically, archtop guitar players for sure. And this is a two-part thing. So there was no place for them to advertise. There's no place for them to really talk to each other. There's no place for promotions. Ever since Just Jazz Guitar magazine, the Ed Benson, who people in this world would know him, since he closed down Just Jazz Guitar magazine, there was no place to go. So I decided that I had a friend, his name is Joe Perry, who was a publisher with Guitar Player magazine, and I knew Ed Benson because he lived very close to me, and I called Ed. I said, Ed, would you consider selling me the remnants of Just Jazz Guitar? And he said, well, I've had 15 offers, I've turned them all down, but I'll talk to you. I said, okay, great. So I called Joe. I said, Joe, are you interested in this project? And Joe said, yeah, what are you doing? I explained to him, and we decided to do something. The piece of advice that we got from Ed Benson, the Just Jazz Guitar guy, is we decided to make it an online-only magazine. We don't print, which gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility. But the startup time has been, you know, the investment that we put into this thing from our own time point of view has been crazy.
Sure.
So the whole idea behind the magazine is to not only call attention to the archtop guys, but to call attention to jazz as jazz guitar, you know, as a genre that's not necessarily tied to any specific instrument. Hmm. So when I say that, what I mean is that jazz is played on tellies, you know, Ted Green, to your point, Mike Stern, you know, Pacifica, or a telly, if you will.
Borelli the Grand.
It's played on Borelli, who, by the way, is going to be in our magazine in December. Hmm. You know, telly, strats, 335s, Les Pauls, it doesn't matter. So when I was in jazz school, I noticed that none of the students had archtops. They couldn't afford them, really. They were all, and if you need one guitar, if you only can afford one guitar to play gigs with, you know, you're not going to be able to make that an archtop because you can't play blues, you can't play country, you can't play this. You know, you have to have something a little more versatile. Mm. So the magazine is all about two things. What we're trying to do, and I'm also a performer. I'm going around in circles a little bit, but I'm also a performer. I do singer-songwriters type stuff. I do jazz, I do blues, I do rock, I do all kinds of fun stuff. And when I'm backstage at these different things, I notice that everybody's playing jazz. They're learning how to play jazz. They're trying to, you know, share licks. And so most of these guys are pentatonic bass players.
Right.
I mean, almost all of them are pentatonic. So they all want more language.
Right.
So this magazine...
Language, that's my favorite way of describing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they all want more language. And so... this magazine is dedicated to those guys. So we're honoring the tradition of the guys like Jimmy Bruno and, you know, the great players that are, you know, Pat Martino. We just did a huge article on a cover story on him. But we also have got guys like Oz Noy. The current cover, believe it or not, is Brent Mason from Nashville, the great Nashville player. We've done Robin Ford, who skims that line between jazz and blues and all that kind of stuff. So our idea here is to have materials in there that help the guy that's been playing pentatonic his whole life to add more language to his playing, if he wants it. So we're all about guys that play telly strats and 335s as much as we are about guys that play 3-inch and 3.5-inch thick archtop guitars.
I was telling Adam Miller, he was here just a minute ago.
Yeah, I know Adam.
And I was saying, you know, I've been playing for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was a student of Ted Green's for 25 years.
Ted Green.
And I don't own an archtop. When I knew Ted, he used to lend me his Birdland but I don't, I've never owned an archtop because what, as exactly as you were saying, my work life had, and even recording or touring or playing was always entirely about being able to play a certain way of a certain kind of a sound that was very versatile. And I've always wanted an archtop, but it's the entry point and the way of finding one that voices correctly, it's such a large entry point. And it is, I mean,
hard.
I mean, even a very expensive like Sur or Anderson or custom made guitar, $2,000, $2,500.
Right.
You know, even if you build it yourself, somewhere in that range.
Right.
Entry points on a lot of these great guitars are $4,500 and up. And that's not saying that they're not worth it. I mean, the differential between a machine, you know, auto lathe machine that's got, you know, all that components built in by a computer.
Right.
And a guy sitting in a room for a year and a half with a chisel and going, you know, I'm going to take off this layer today.
Right.
You know, and that's a completely different concept.
I love those guys downstairs in that room at the festival.
They seem, all of them seem great.
They're unbelievable. The amount of workmanship and detail and craftsmanship and artisanness that goes on down there is crazy. I love those instruments. I pick them up and I just melt and drool over them. I'd be afraid to take most of them out on a gig. I wouldn't want them to get bent or doctor, I think. And
how do you think classical, so I mean, I'm just thinking, it was weird, Adam and I were talking about this. So a classical musician,
right,
who's in an orchestra, who's a working guy,
right,
entry point 30-40 grand,
easy,
right, and 30-40 grand, and they're doing
right.
So, you know, while I understand it's expedient that mass produced instruments, you know, Lee Fender and you know, and Les Paul and all those things, and Gibson came together,
right,
and mass produced instruments that are workhorses,
right,
and but you know, some of those are in the $300,000 or $400,000 ranges. You know, you can get into crazy expensive. Ted Green's entire the rumor is Ted Green's entire Tele collection went to Rolling Stones. Extremely
Keith Richards.
Thank you. My brain just kicked out.
Yeah, okay.
Keith Richards bought his entire collection, supposedly. I don't know if that's true or not.
I guess Keith can afford it.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a crazy collection of Teles and those kinds of vintage instruments that are that. If you're a modern working guy, being able to come and see these incredible instruments and maybe understand why you'd want to have access to and own an instrument like this.
Right.
I think that's what the great thing about this festival is, because there's no place, I can't go to NAMM and see this.
No.
And there's no place that I know of where I can go and I can see this kind of craftsmanship, which is also something I think is missing in the current music and technology culture.
Right.
Like the idea of actual true craftsmanship.
Absolutely.
You know, as a musician or as a builder or as an instrument, you know, any of those things.
Totally agree with you.
You know, so this is, I think, that's the great thing about the festival, is that Peter's trying to bring all those components together and breathe some life into it.
Yeah, Peter Hendrickson deserves all kinds of credit for all the things he's doing for this community. I just thought I'd mention that as a little thing for Peter.
So Peter, you're getting, I'm invisibly putting coins in the credit machine.
I love.
And your credit karma, your karma is just going up as we're talking.
Peter is, someday it's gonna be Saint Peter. You know,
Saint Peter Hendrickson.
I mean, well, you know,
that could be his next amp.
We're getting off on a thing, but his dedication to this market is unbelievable, and what he's had to go through to put this festival together, and the response from the community of builders and players that's here this weekend is amazing. Nothing's cheap about coming here.
No.
You know, and these guys had to know this was going to be a quality event, and they love the guy and what he's doing and all that, to have the faith in him to show up. And you know what? I was down in that room 10 minutes ago. It's packed full of people digging it.
And what I think is really extraordinary is it's the first seed of a much larger tree.
Absolutely.
You know, that, you know, Denver's an international hub. There's a place where you can do this. He's got the performance space at Hendrickson Amps.
Right.
All these venues around here that want to support what he's doing. The city wants to support what he's doing. So I think that the future of this event can only grow.
You know, that's what we're counting on with the magazine. We want to grow this community, and Peter's one of our guys, and we want to grow the community with him. We see that his vision is our vision, to be honest with you, so we totally agree. You started on something, if you don't mind, and you were saying something about, you know, why would somebody not pay $4,500 to $5,000 for an archtop, but they will pay $30,000 for a classical guitar, you know?
Or a cello.
Or a cello or some of that. And I think the quick answer to that is it's very different, the environment of the performance for most of these guys. When you're a classical guitar player, you walk into a concert hall. You know, it's a very controlled environment. People are wearing, you know, black tie and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
And your instrument is safe and protected. I took a 17-inch archtop that I paid really, really good money to one of my gigs that I hired an 8-piece band on. I had a flat top guitar, I had a Les Paul, and I had my arch top because I do a lot of different things. And one of the saxophone players knocked over my arch top. Now, it just so happens it didn't do any damage. I mean, literally there's not a mark on it, but I'll never take that guitar out to a gig like that again.
But what about record? So do you feel for recording it's more
viable?
I take it
for recording, yeah. I think it has to do with the genre that's being played today. You know, a lot of guys, and I could be going down the wrong rabbit hole here, but there's something in there. It's a very good question. There's something in there. Why won't somebody put that kind of money up? And I will say this: people who are really into this music that are making any money at it, okay, and that are not funded by their day gig, they seem to have some pretty good instruments. The guys that are, you know, trying to make a living at it, they just don't, they can't justify the cost. It's just not there for them. If you make it as a concert guitarist, a concert classical guitarist, you know, you're playing concerts for a pretty good bit of money. If you don't make it, then it's a whole different world. You have to have that instrument. You're not in the game.
I mean, I'm just fascinated because, I mean, I owned a number of studios, and I think about, mm-hmm. like, how do you acquire tools of the trade?
Right.
And I learned fairly early on that one doesn't pay cash. So that Sweetwater has a wonderful model for younger musicians
right.
where you can finance an expensive piece of gear
right.
with zero interest for 3 or 4 years, and then you can afford it. Maybe there's actually a need. I'm just, spitballing, but there's a need to create a leasing foundation company that allows musicians who are on the verge of breaking or want to break to be able to afford these kinds of instruments and be able to get access to this level of instrument without having to break the bank.
Let me say this. I'm agreeing with you, but let me grab this for you for a second. The jazz market is by far the smallest market of
Absolutely.
All music out there.
Absolutely.
It's 1 or 2% of the total of all money spent on music, okay?
You think that much?
It's 1 or 2%, yeah.
That's a large number, actually.
It's not very, but it's very small. And I'm trying to be generous because I don't have the facts right in front of me.
Sure.
And that's jazz. That's not jazz guitar, okay? Let me be clear. That's not jazz. That's jazz. That's
right. the whole
saxophones,
category.
Pianos, you know, a whole nine yards. And if you look at that, you go, okay, it's a very small market. So it's not guitar players. So the guitar playing portion of that sliver of the market is maybe 10% of that at best. So it's a really, 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 really small group of people.
It's a rarefied group of people.
Yeah, rarefied. And so the reason for that is there's no demand for the music, really. I mean, honestly, there's no demand. And there's a few people, like the people down the room, that dig it and get into it. So if our magazine is successful, and we can start shining more light back onto this music and help promote this music, you know, maybe the guys coming up will say, hey, you know what, I'm going to play that music. If I'm going to play that music right, I need a really good guitar. If I'm going to get a really good guitar, I need to go to a luthier and buy it from who?
Or come to Peter's annual Archtop Festival.
Come to Peter's annual Archtop
which
Festival.
Is going to be happening in Arvada for the near foreseeable next few years.
I've been to a fair amount of, I went to every NAMM show from 1984 up until last year.
Wow, that's impressive.
It's a lot of NAMM shows.
Do you know what a synclavier is?
Yes.
I was the first freelance synclavier programmer, or one of the first.
You're him.
and I used to do NAMM forever.
You're that guy.
I am that guy. But it was, and I had to stop going to NAMM because I found for me the experience of NAMM was that it was actually the opposite of what I'm having today.
Uh-huh.
NAMM for me was like a lot of anxious sort of sellers and buyers where the it didn't feel very musical. Like it was a lot of like sort of very stressed out energy. And for me, what I'm seeing today, which is extraordinary, is a lot of very happy, relaxed people who are fascinated by the craftsmanship of the build
right.
and the craftsmanship of the style and the community of people who love this kind of music.
That's not NAMM.
No, but that's what's happening here.
Yeah, I know. It is what's happening here. I did NAMM. I was that guy. I was that stressed out guy that had to sell and get orders and work with people that had to buy and get, you know, you nailed it. You're exactly right. That is the environment.
And I think that's what's interesting is the music, the need to return to jazz, the need to return to human-based music, which actually, you know, my son's 27 and he's grown up around this kind of music.
Sure.
His understanding and his friend's understanding as I turn them on to it is, wow, this stuff is cool.
Right.
Because it's not some guy going
right.
and pushing on Ableton Live. It's like musicians in a room interacting, telling stories, and evoking something that's much more interesting than just that.
I'm on the board of a club, a board of directors of an advisor of a club in Atlanta called the Velvet Note. And I see a lot of jazz. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a jazz club. It's mm-hmm. number one jazz club in the city and all that kind of thing. And people that tell me that they don't like jazz have never heard good jazz. And that's this is my feeling about this. Because whenever I've taken somebody to somebody that's really, really good, they go, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff that I understand why they're not too crazy about it. I mean, I don't mean to be negative.
I think it's also orientation. My wife is from Latin America.
Yeah.
And was never around blues or jazz.
Right.
Ever until she met me.
Okay.
And it took me 2 years to get her to sort of understand the blues thing.
All right.
And I was in a very wonderful band. I was in a band with Mike Finnegan, the B3 player.
Right.
And Steve Ferroni from Tom Petty. And yeah. Those guys. It was a great band. And mm-hmm. It took her a while. The jazz thing took her longer because she said she didn't understand what was happening.
Oh.
Like, it was her. I was like, well, why are you guys... You play the melody and then all this other crazy stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, that's the interesting part of jazz is the musicians are exploring that framework. And it took her a while to get it. And I think that people who don't listen to jazz or have not been brought up on it don't understand that that's the point.
Right.
That the exploration and the conversation that's happening with the musicians...
The improvisational melodies and conversation between the musicians is the two great big things. You know, I'm going to kind of... I understand what you're saying, and I agree with that. When it's done really well, and I know that you know when it's done really well, those melodies that people grab onto by the really good players make the music enjoyable. Now, there's a lot of people that play out. I mean, every note, when I say play out, I don't mean play out of the house. I mean play out notes and a lot of altered and all that. And if you're not skilled at resolving that well, that can be a tough pill for a lot of people to listen to. Now, people who are really into it, people are really into it, hear it and they know exactly what's going on. They go, wow, he played this over that. And, whoa, what a cool idea that is. But for the lay listener, that can be a tough pill. I totally agree with you.
I think the way I described it to my wife was I said, it's music that's meant to be forgotten.
Right.
That it's actually intended to be in the moment in such a way that a good musician or a good storyteller will carry you through the thread of the container of the song.
That's perfectly put.
You know, and yeah. she after a while she has it. She actually really likes it quite a bit now.
Yeah.
And her background is music. So let's. I don't want to take up too much of your time.
Sure.
I know you're a busy man. Let's just have a. Tell me the URL for the website.
It's just jazzguitartoday.com.
Okay, and is it something subscription-based or...?
It's a subscription, but the subscriptions are free.
Okay.
So if you go to jazzguitartoday.com, you can look at all of our stuff. You'll see that there's a pop-up, if you will, that'll allow you to subscribe. It's free. And then we also have an Instagram page, and we also have a Facebook page that are pretty active. We're doing a lot of things. It'd be really difficult to tell you all that we've done and all that we're doing in the magazine, but I think it's really cool. We're working really hard to make this thing something special, and so far the feedback has been great. You can email me at bob@jazzguitartoday.com if you've got ideas or suggestions. I'm always happy to hear things.
Let's say that again a little bit more slowly.
I'm sorry. bob@jazzguitartoday.com. You can email me. We're very serious about making this a world-class, presentation of jazz guitar. And we hope that everybody really likes it and subscribes and shares it with their friends. And
we'll see what we can do to make that happen.
I appreciate that.
Any last thoughts about the Rocky Mountain Archtop Festival?
I was going to say I've been to a lot of trade shows. It's a really great festival. The instruments that are here are truly world-class. The players that have come to support it are truly world-class. It's a great hang. You nailed it with it's a relaxed vibe. No one's pressuring people to buy this or buy that. Arvada, Colorado, I was going to say California, is a cool place to be. The nighttime scene that Peter has put together to coincide with the show, with the festival, is great. If you don't know this, there's several... venues in town, which is only a short walk away from where we are, Peter's got people performing there all night. You walk the streets, there are people on the streets, there's a vibe, it's a happening thing. Everybody's just having a great time. I highly recommend you get it on your calendar for next year if you're not here now.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate
it. And I look forward to staying in touch.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care.